You know, I heard a very interesting statement once from Nat Hentoff. He and I probably wouldn't agree on too much. He was writing for the Village Voice at the time, and he said, because he saw this systematic erosion of full, free, unfettered speech in the United States. And that means, you know, you and I get to hear ideas we disagree with. Okay, you can't have free speech and then think you somehow get to hear something only that you agree with. Free speech means in the marketplace of ideas, and that's the theme for this program, that you're going to hear things that you disagree with and hear things that you agree with. So you have an idea that you disagree with, the old adage, how do you defeat an idea you disagree with? You introduce a better idea. So I am seeing, is having lived through the 60s, something now that is absolutely chilling to me. I watched people parade up and down the streets of our major cities and put crucifixes in vats of urine and say it was defensible because it was free speech. I saw people trample the American flag underfoot, set it on fire, and do other horrible things with it, all under the guise of free speech. Fast forward to the 21st century. I'm not quite sure that solid science is there that says that man is the great polluter and CO2 is the great toxin. I think this requires further investigation. Now, you might have 15 initials after your name. But there are some people in this current government who think that that is a prosecutable, not just an idea they disagree with, it is a prosecutable idea. And that should give everybody who loves and cherishes free speech a wake-up call. Gail Trotter is with us. She's a columnist, a political analyst, and an attorney. You see her on television all the time. She also contributes to The Hill, The Daily Caller, Town Hall, and lots of other well-known political websites. She serves as vice president of the Kirkpatrick Society. And really cool, she and my daughter got their law degree from the same school. Go UVA! Gail, I am so thankful that you're here. Thank you for writing on this and really stirring up a cultural conversation about this. You used a phrase that I thought was brilliant. Litigation as policymaking. Drop it in the context of this whole idea now, the federal government saying, we just might go after those people who are climate change deniers.
Yes, so great to be with you. And I loved my experience at UVA Law School, which the University of Virginia was founded by Thomas Jefferson, who was one of our very most important founding fathers. And he understood the value of free speech, being able to have a robust marketplace of ideas, just as you said, so that when we come together to do politics, which essentially is how we order our lives together, we have full information. We may disagree with the ideas may not stand with evidence, but we have the presentation of all the ideas. And it is so important when we have these disagreements or these robust discussions of items of national importance that we have access to the full panoply of discussion and viewpoints on these issues. So I wrote this piece for Mediaite. I've never written on climate change before, but I was suddenly made aware that the government officials of four major states decided that they would pool together with one part of this debate on climate change and decide to target the opposition. So they were able to collude together to try and use the force of government to silence the opposition.
Gail, again, you, and I'm so glad you started out referencing Thomas Jefferson because, you know, this is the man who drafted Virginia's First Amendment, which became the basis of our
Yes.
First Amendment, which protects free speech. So the paradox here can't be overlooked. And now you have a government that basically says, you I disagree with. So therefore, I'm going to come down with a heavy fist of potential litigation if you don't march in lockstep with my idea. That is the antithesis of everything we have believed as a nation since our inception. Forget climate change. Just push that aside for a moment.
Right.
The process of saying I disagree with you to the point where I'm going to prosecute what you believe and what you say is absolutely ludicrous. And to me, it's also sloppy legal thinking because there are people saying, well, it's like the people who created cigarettes. They knew what they were doing, so they should be held liable. And we're going to use RICO law here. I mean, this is like taking the law and stretching it like Gumby over the ideas that are out there. It doesn't even make sense legally. In fact, I don't think it would necessarily pass muster in a court, but I'd like your take on that.
Right. And it's so important to understand that you put it so well and so succinctly, the idea, like, take the issue that we're discussing out of the conversation right now and just understand if there are two sides or many sides to any debate, we had a situation where that there is evidence that in this situation, global warmest organizations met with government officials. They came up with a strategy to use the federal anti-racketeering statute, which is called RICO, and there are state corollaries to that law as well, to go after companies that, even if, like you say, it won't stand up on the merits in a court of law, the point is that the process is the punishment. It diverts the resources of the companies that are being targeted by the attorneys general. One of the attorneys general is Claude Walker, who is from the Virgin Islands, and he went and issued a subpoena or got a subpoena issued against ExxonMobil and its communications for 10 years with 90 policy and political organizations that are taking neutral data from sources like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which is a government agency, taking the data from this government agency and putting it out into the public conversation. So this Attorney General Claude Walker decided to go after ExxonMobil and try and subpoena the organizations to get the communications between them for 10 years, modeled on the tobacco litigation, which resulted in over $200 billion windfall for attorneys, PR people, consultants. And it showed that I cite in my piece, there's an NPR story that talks about the negligible benefits to public health from the tobacco settlement, because a lot of this money that was part of the settlement ended up being redirected to the general accounts of these states. And the really frightening thing about this, one of the guys who was part of this discussion with the government officials wanted to make sure that if any settlement comes out of this climate change litigation that the attorneys general are pushing, which would probably end up having a civil component to it as well, not just the criminal component, which is under the federal racketeering statute, but if there's a civil component and there's some sort of settlement, this guy who's a professor at George Mason University, another founder who understood the importance of our Bill of Rights, this professor is out there saying he wants to see a big chunk of any settlement on climate change go towards educating the public on the dangers of climate change. So it is this, you know, circular thing where they're going to target the opposition. They're going to try to get the opposition to settle, because anybody who understands litigation knows that plenty of times when people are not, they just want the litigation to go away, they'll settle it. They end up generating money for the opposition, which hopes to launch this national campaign educating or maybe re-educating people about their political position. It is just astonishing.
Something's rotten in Denmark. So it isn't just litigation as policymaking, but it's also profiteering by promoting your propaganda through threats of litigation. And it really is creating kind of heckler's veto. If you don't want to be prosecuted, you're just going to be quiet.
Right.
And the thing is that, Gail, the people, as I study the people who are daring to question, who are saying the models just don't support it, the evidence simply isn't there, are people who are associated with NASA. They're associated with the Weather Channel. They're at they're peer-reviewed, published articles. These are not people who live in dark caves somewhere and haven't seen light for 100 years. They're people who really understand science. And yet, and the paradox in all of this, especially talking about education, is the very definition of education is to sift and weigh and to vet ideas. And these academicians and these researchers are saying, yeah, but the science doesn't stand up under the scrutiny. So this requires further investigation. It's almost like the proponents are saying, no, no more questions, Your Honor. We want the jury to rule, and we don't want any more evidence here.
Right. Instead of having an umpire calling balls and strikes, you're having the umpire decide at the beginning of the game, we're not going to play the game. We're just going to say that one team won, and we're not even going to have the game. And like you said, the point of education is to promote critical thinking. So if one side of any debate does not have the evidence to back them up, they're going to lose the debate. So why is the other side of this debate so frightened of the truth that they're pulling in? And this should upset everybody, regardless if you believe that climate change is happening, that it's man-made, that man can fix it, and that the costs of changing it are worth the benefits that humankind will receive. Even if you believe all four of those points, you should be outraged about this conduct by the attorneys general, because they are abusing their office, the power of their office.
Hear, hear. You could not have said that better. Let me quote something you said in your article so my friends will understand that we're talking big bucks here, okay? This isn't pocket change. You wrote the strategy used, and this is what you were talking about the application of RICO when it came to the use of tobacco. The strategy seeks to replicate the successful shakedown of tobacco companies in the 1990s, which brought about a, wait for it, $200 billion windfall that lined the pockets of plaintiffs' lawyers, public relations firms, and other rent seekers who realized significant personal benefits with negligible benefits to public health. So, Gail, when you start crunching the numbers here, is it really about this sort of Diogenes approach where I can only tell the truth, though I might be blindfolded? I only want truth about science. I don't think that's it at all. There's a subtext here that is particularly nefarious. Let me take a break and come back. And I want to appeal to you as the woman who was the editor of the International Law Journal when you were at UVA, because I want to know whether or not these threats from these attorneys generals makes us ahead of other countries. I know this is a big deal internationally, but this threat of litigation, does that now make us the front runner in this climate change stuff globally? We'll be back with Gail Trotter right after this. Gail Trotter is with us. Gail is a columnist, a political analyst, and an attorney. And you know what's really cool? That's why I love doing Christian radio. Now you're going to see Gail on TV because she's on all the time, because booking agents are brilliant to put her on these shows. You're going to say, oh, that's a really smart lawyer I heard on In the Market. Yep, indeed. And by the way, we've got a link to her website, inthemarketwithjennapartial.org. I know you're stuck in rush hour traffic. You can't write it down. Don't worry, it's there for you. But this piece that she wrote on climate change thuggery is so succinct. It's so brilliant. It's so important because this is about a paradigm shift in the way in which we see ourselves as a country. You know, there's a reason why the First Amendment is the First Amendment. It is the peg on which all other rights are hung. So that freedom of assembly, free speech, freedom of religion were so paramount to our founders. They made it number one, not by accident, because you erode any aspect of that First Amendment and you no longer have American exceptionalism. Now, there's a crash course in history, and I want to do a little more history here. So, Gail, when you were at UVA, you were the editor of the International Law Journal, which is really cool, by the way. So I watch what's happening. For example, in Great Britain, they're talking about having a carbon card so that you can actually see how big your footprint is. And they've been floating around at the UN for some time, penalties for countries if they supersede, etc. So when we now have this idea where we might prosecute if you're a climate change denier, is that new? Is there any other country replicating that, or is the United States first in that area?
Well, Jana, first, I don't want to take false credit. I was only an editor, not the editor of the International Journal of Law. But I just want to make sure I'm very accurate. But it is really fascinating to think about this because we are seeing a lot of calls for prosecution of climate change deniers, not just on the corporate level, but also individuals as well. Mark Stein, who's a columnist, and you may be familiar with his work, but he's been embroiled in an over 5-year court case in the court system of the District of Columbia, where I live, which is not somewhere you ever want to be embroiled in litigation. And that was all from a very short blog post he wrote on National Review Online. I think it was maybe a 500-word blog post. And the climate scientist that he challenged in this blog post decided to sue National Review, sue Mark Stein. And because the wheels of justice turn very slowly, he's had to go through 5 years of litigation, expensive attorney's fees, disruptions to his schedule, flying to D.C. so that he could testify and be available for depositions and other court appearances. So when you talk about this on the international level, you do see America being a leader for addressing climate change, and I'm using quotation marks in the air, because we have seen President Obama, through this climate change agreement that was signed in Paris, not only is he pushing forward with this very extreme agenda that a lot of Americans either don't understand or don't agree with because they don't understand the cost that it's going to charge to our economy, to our growth, and our development, but he's also countermanding another important constitutional provision that requires the president to submit treaties to the Senate so that there can be a robust debate. The Senate can take it up and either support, approve the treaty, or, you know, send it back to the president and say this is unacceptable. So here's yet another example where President Obama and his administration have decided it's more expedient to put their political ideology and their political agenda above the Constitution. So we see a battle on all fronts on the issue of, you know, going around Congress and trying to enter the United States into a binding agreement with the international players who are other countries, non-governmental organizations, other people that are very invested in advancing the climate change agenda. And then we also see these efforts at the state level by sympathetic attorneys general who are in complete alignment with the global warmest organizations that I mentioned and also with the Obama administration. So it's repeated at the highest levels and then also at the state level.
Excellent point. Excellent point. So let me ask you a sort of transcendent philosophical question, because I really think this is hugely important. There's a paradigm shift that I am witnessing in Washington right now. In fact, you were talking about this superseding of Congress. Didn't we just see this, by the way, when DOJ and DOE, the Department of Justice, the Department of Education, send down a threatening directive to all public high schools, public grade schools, public middle schools, museums, etc., libraries, anybody whose hand is in the federal cookie jar, if you don't march in lockstep with the administration's idea of redefining what sex means in the civil rights law, then, you know, too bad, because we're going to take your funding away. This is the circumnavigation of Congress. And again, take out the transgender issue, as volatile as that might be. Just go to the rule of law. The rule of law is an equal level playing field. It's what keeps us a society in check and protects every one of us. If government decides, nah, just kidding, we're going to ignore the separation of powers here and accountability constitutionally, and they make it up as they go along because of an adherence to an agenda, all people suffer, whether they're Republican, Democrat, conservative, or liberal. Am I right?
Absolutely. And regardless of what you think about the transgender issue or the policy or the right policy, for the Obama administration to redefine a law that has been on the books for over 40 years to, as I just was saying with the climate change agenda, to advance a political ideology, everyone should be so upset by that, because it doesn't matter what the issue is. It is the wrong, totally wrong way to approach it. And we've seen this from the Supreme Court with the decisions on Obamacare, where Chief Justice John Roberts said it was a tax and then it wasn't a tax. We saw it with the marriage decision. It's repeated over and over again.
Yeah. Boy, what a great point. And by the way, on that ruling by Roberts, that's going to be one of those cases where they're going to read in law school for the next 50 years. Well, let's see. No, it's not an overreach of the Commerce Clause. I know, it's a tax. That's it. We'll call it a tax. It's okay. That's Congress's job. What a debacle of legal reasoning that was. Gail, excellent conversation. And here's what I'm trying to challenge my friends on a regular basis. Try to raise your head above the weeds. Climate change, yeah, hot button issue. Transgender, yep, hot button issue. But you know, I am about preserving the Republic, as Ben Franklin said, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. I'm interested in preserving the process. It has served us well for over 200 years, built on the idea that man is basically sinful and we needed a system of checks and balances. So executive, legislative, and judicial had to hold each other at abeyance for the better nature of our nation. And that, by the way, is being radically redone and undone before our eyes. It takes people like Gail to issue a wake-up call. I appreciate Gail so much. Check her out on our website, inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Her piece on climate change deniers, superb and a bit prophetic, if I may say. This is just getting traction. This is far from over, but read it. It's an excellent piece. I thank you, friends, for joining us. Check out the new Truth Tool, Answers to Prayers by George Mueller. Follow me on Twitter @ParshallTalk, and I'll see you next time.